Good evening. I'd like to say, along with Brother Rick, it's good to see all that have come out. We've got a house full. We're glad to see all of you. I just about know everybody here, I think. It's good to see familiar faces. I've had people tell me sometime when I get through with a lesson, they say, "You stepped on my toes." And I said, "Well, you know, if I stepped on your toes, I was preaching to me, so you're in the same boat with me. So we'll just cry together. But maybe make changes or whatever. But I hope maybe I can say something that causes us to walk closer to God. That's what I'm shooting for this week. I hope maybe that we can have a closer fellowship with God. That's what it's all about. If we're going to serve God, we need to know Him and have a fellowship with Him, Him and Jesus. Jonathan asked me outside. He said, "You got a good lesson for tonight?" I said, "No, I don't have a good lesson, but I'm going to talk about doing good, so maybe that's the next best thing." I thought he'd heard me before, but I don't know why I expected that. Going to talk about doing good. In the Christian walk, we know from the Scriptures we're supposed to emulate Christ. We're supposed to do like Him, follow His example. That's what the Bible tells us. There are many facets concerning Him when He was on this earth, the things that He did a lot of things. It's hard for us to do all of those, but tonight I'd just like to talk about one particular thing. Maybe we can work on one thing at a time and add to it. One thing that we should do is go about doing good. That's what He did. If you look at His life, that's what, mainly, if you had to sum it up, which that's what we're going to do tonight. I'd like to talk to you about what Peter said about Jesus when he was talking to Cornelius. But first, I'd like to ask you about two or three questions. If you could sum up your life to this point, how would you do that? If you had one single sentence that you could say, what would you say about your life? And it's something well to think about, because we need to evaluate ourselves occasionally and see where we stand and what we're doing. You know, be as accurate as possible just between you yourself, and God, and just sum up your life where you are. For example, you might summarize your life by saying, "Well, I have a tendency to take the easy way out. I always kind of look out for myself." You could say, I dotted every I and I crossed every T. I always did everything as perfect as I possibly could. So on and so forth. You might just say, "Well, at least I meant well." But a lot of times I didn't always do what I should, but I meant well. My heart was in the right place. You know, you could say a lot of different things. You decide what you would say. Another thing, I'd just say, how would somebody else size up your life? Closest friend, maybe, if you had somebody that knows you pretty well, or see what they say, or maybe your frenemies. That's somebody that's supposed to be a friend, but they're really not. They don't really care too much about you, but they pretend to be your friend. What would they say about you if they summed up your life in one sentence? If they were accurate and told the truth about you, what would they say? Maybe they'd say, "Well, he's the kind of fellow you could call on when you're in a jam. You can depend on him." Or they might say, he's got a good heart, but you can't count on him. He won't show up when you really need him. He's got a good heart. He means well, but you just can't really count on him. He's the kind of guy that does everything by the book, on and on and on. You know, what would they say about you? Third question is, looking beyond today, looking towards the end, when everything is kind of over, when it's all done and said, you're getting ready to walk that lonesome valley, what would God say about you? How would He sum up your life? That's what really matters. You know, we can look at what we'd say, what our friends would say, and that might just encourage us or discourage us, might cause us to do better or whatever. But what matters is what God's going to say that last day. So what would He say today if you just left today? What would He say? Think about that. How would God summarize your life? Would He even know you? You might think that sounds a little silly. Here we are in the Lord's house tonight. You'd think God would know us, wouldn't you? You would think, surely, as long as I've been going to church. We may think we stand pretty good, but that's not always the way God views it. If you look at Matthew 7, verses 21 through 23, Jesus says, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many would say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name cast out devils? In thy name done many wonderful works?" He said, they're going to say this to me on the last day. Many will say that. "Then I will profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity." You know, the people, it sounds like they're going to be surprised. They're going to really be taken aback when he says this to them, because they think, didn't I do all this for you? Many people are going to think that. So to hear that God didn't know them, that's going to really shake them up. They're going to be lost, and there's nothing they can do about it. The time's going to be over. So that's the reason for these questions. I think we need to take a long, hard look at ourselves. Sometimes when you need to do that, we need to look at the man in the mirror objectively, if we can, and see where we stand. Too many times we can see everybody else's faults, and I don't see Donald's. I think I'm doing okay. I may be worse off than all of you. I need to look and see where I'm at. We need to ask ourselves these questions. When your thoughts, your deeds, your motives, your intentions, your accomplishments, when they're all added up and tallied up, the total sum, what would you want it to say about your life? How would you want it to summarize what you have done? When Jesus walked among us, he told us what his life was about. He was up front always, wasn't he? There were no secrets there. And we could see it in his actions. He didn't just talk. He did it. He showed us. He said, "For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost," Luke 19:10. He also said in John 10:10, "I'm come that they might have life and they might have it more abundantly." He came for our sake. He was in heaven. He had a cushy place there in heaven. He came for us because he was concerned for us, and he went about doing good. That's what the life of Jesus was about. Seek and save the ones who were wrecked with sin. All of us. The whole world was lost, wasn't it? The entire world was lost till Jesus got here. So he came to fill their life with meaning and purpose. In his words, abundance. That's what his life was about. That's why we're here tonight. We're here tonight because this room is filled with people that were once lost, but now we're found. We were once deep in sin, but now we're saved from that. Hopefully we're all in good shape from the treacherous sin that we were in. That's what Jesus was all about. That's what his life was about. That's what his resurrection was about. Now back to the question about how you might summarize your life. Shortly after the death and resurrection of Jesus, Peter was sent to the house of Cornelius. He was a Roman soldier. We know he was a Gentile. The Gentiles were not in the church at the time. He was not a Jew, but he was considered a God-fearing person. He followed the moral code of the Jews, but he didn't go along with the kosher diet and all that and the sacrifices and everything they did, but he was a good man. Bible says he was generous to the poor and he prayed to the Lord regularly. Then one day he had a vision, and an angel told him in effect, said, if you want to know what God's about, if you want to contact him and know what's really going on, this is my words, he said, you need to contact a man called Peter. So Cornelius sent for Peter, and Peter came to his house and he told him about Jesus. He preached a short sermon to him that day. And Cornelius was filled with the Spirit, if you'll remember the story, and he was baptized. He went from being just a merely God-fearing person to being a Spirit-filled man of God, follower of Jesus Christ. Now, we don't have time to go into all of that story. I brought that up to tell you this. Today, we're going to focus on one verse, one thing that Peter told him there, one phrase that he told Cornelius. He summarized the life of Jesus with a simple and yet elegant way. And it's the same way we should live our life, just like Jesus did, because he is Jesus, we're his followers. So when we look at what he did, and we can't do everything that he did, but I think we can do this one thing. Don't you hear what Peter said? In Acts 10, we find him talking to Cornelius, telling him all about Jesus, how he preached throughout Judea, all the things that he did. And he tells him in verse 38, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed, or under the power, rather, of the devil, for God was with him. That's the key verse. The key phrase is, he went around doing good because God was with him. That's what I want you to remember tonight. That's what I want you to get out of this. What an incredible way to summarize the life of a person. When you said that about Jesus, that was a whole lot to say in such a short little phrase. You know, there are many things about Jesus that you and I can never imitate. My birth wasn't announced by a host of holy angels. And when you were born, there was no star over the delivery room. None of us are perfect, are we? None of us can walk on water. None of us ever died for the sins of the world or never will. We can't do a lot of things that Jesus did. We can't duplicate the divine nature of Jesus Christ. We can't do that. We're not on the same plane there with Jesus. But we can be imitators of Christ in a small way. And this is one of the ways to do that. Do what Peter told Cornelius. He went around doing good. If that's the best way to summarize the life of Jesus, then that ought to be a good way to summarize our life. Would you agree with that? You know, it's not hard to just go around doing good when you think about it. It's not all that complicated, is it? We're to be like Jesus. If we're going to do that, we first have to know him. We need to know who he is. Again, that may sound sort of crazy to us because we read about him all the time. We've been talking about him here for probably 5 minutes. But that's different than just knowing him personally, having a relationship with Jesus. That's what we have to have. We have to have a relationship. If we don't, it's not going to work. You could say, well, okay, if that's what I've got to do is just go about being good, I can just do that. I'll just go ahead and do that. You can't do that. The reason it won't work is because you said you're going to do this. You've decided to do this on your own, by yourself. You're just going to do good. Well, if you want to do like Jesus, you've got to have God's help. It's a joint effort. You cannot do it by yourself. It's impossible. If you notice the phrase Peter said was, he went about doing good because God was with him. Do you see that? Jesus did good because God was with him. That's saying, had God not been with him, he couldn't have done good. Jesus depended on him. He prayed to him all the time. You know, the worst thing for him when he was on the cross is when God turned his back on him. That was the hardest part for him, when God turned his back on him. So without God in his life, he couldn't have accomplished the things he did. Without God in our life, without Jesus in our life, we can't accomplish anything. Nothing. There's no way we can serve God unless we have a fellowship with him. If Jesus couldn't do it, where would we be? If you try to do it alone, it's sort of like Moses' law. You know, in Moses' law, they had all these laws, do's and don'ts. You do this, you don't do that. You do this, you don't do that. It didn't work, did it? They couldn't keep that law. They couldn't keep that because it was so much different. That's why we got the perfect law of liberty today. Our law is all about love. It's totally different than what they had. They couldn't keep that law. They kept straying away. It was a makeshift law. It was a makeshift way to get by until Jesus came on the scene. So if you try to do everything on your own, if you just try to follow things by the letter without God's help, you're going to fall on your face. That's why we have the perfect law of liberty. Like I said, we serve out of love. It makes all the difference in the world. It makes all the difference in the world. You know, you take a job. If you love a job, you'll enjoy it. And somebody said one time, they said, if you get a job you love, you never work a day in your life. But if you don't, if you're just gritting your teeth trying to work, it's hard work. It'll kill you, won't it? But if there's love involved, it's easy. Same way with this, if your heart's in it. Because it's easier for us to do it out of love today, because when you know Jesus, you have something to do. You want to do it. You want to serve Jesus. You want to serve God. So it's not a chore now. It's a joy and a privilege. Judas is a good example of this, or you might say he's a bad example, whichever way you want to look at it. He went about with all the others. He was one of the chosen 12, one of the original apostles. He watched Jesus perform miracles. Jesus healed the sick, raised the dead. He did all kind of miracles, did all kind of things. And he was right there with him. Whatever good any of the others did, Judas was right there with him. He did just whatever they did, right along with them. He participated, and Judas seemed to fit in. Seemed just like he was one of them. At the Last Supper, when Jesus said that one of you right here at this table is going to betray me this very night, they didn't know who it was. They didn't one time doubt Judas any more than they did anybody else. When he said that, they began to ask one another, which one of us is it's going to do this thing? Who's going to betray Jesus? Luke 22 and 23, that's where he asked that. We don't know much about Judas, but we do know that he'd seen Jesus, but he didn't know Jesus. You see the difference? There's a huge difference. He had heard Jesus, but he didn't understand Jesus. He had a religion, but he didn't have a relationship with Jesus. Too many in the world today, there's lots of religions in this world today, but they don't know Jesus. They got man-made religions, and there's some of them's going to ask him on that last day, didn't we prophesy in your name? Didn't we do all these things? And he's going to say, depart from me, I never knew you. But not just them, it can very well be us. If we don't take a hard look at ourselves and see if we have a relationship with God, with Jesus. You know, he didn't have a relationship with Jesus, so Satan was looking for somebody to do the dirty work, and he was the very one, he was a perfect one. He needed somebody that had seen Jesus, knew who he was so he could point him out, but didn't really know who he was, didn't know him personally. So we can learn from Judas the betrayer. You know, I've always been kind of sad for him because when I read about Judas, I don't know, it just kind of made me sad. I thought how bad that was. There's been a lot of people lost in the world, and it's sad that they all were lost, and many are lost today. But I don't know, something about it just always got to me when I read about Judas. I think how sad that was. But you know, it's no worse than any of us. If I wind up being lost, I'm going to be right there with Judas. We know where he is. Mark Carpenter said over there when he was at Ephesus, he said, you take the worst, sorriest scoundrel in the world, they're going to be, you know where they're going to be. And said, if we're lost, we're going to be right there with them. I thought that was a very good point. Wouldn't you hate to spend eternity with the worst people in the world? That's where we're going to be if we're lost. The worst people in the world. You know, one thing we can learn from Judas here is, Satan's best tools of destruction are not always outside the church. A lot of times it's inside the church. That's where he works. He wants us. He's already got the rest of the world. He wants us to be lost. Damage is caused by a lot of people that are like Judas. People that have seen Jesus, they don't know him. They have a religion, but they don't have a relationship with Jesus. They're familiar with the teachings of Christ. A lot of us are familiar with the teachings. But if you could quote the whole Bible, if you didn't do it, what good is it? Actually, it might hurt us really in the long run when you think about it. We might have more to answer for. They're not on intimate terms with Jesus. And so they're just going through the motions pretty much. Some people do. Politicians are bad about it. They'll come to church just to get noticed so they can get votes. They're going through the motions. You know, it's dangerous to do things like that. But back to doing good. I'd like to share a story with you that I read. It's a boy named Luke Cameron. He's a young man living in the United Kingdom. Towards the end of 2013, a close family friend, a woman who had been like a second mother to him, died of cancer. Luke was devastated, and as a way of honoring her life and her memory, Luke resolved to do a good deed every day. That's, you know, it's admirable. He began this project on January 1st, 2014, and over the following weeks and months, he continued to seek out opportunities to at least do one good deed a day. For example, he bought food for the homeless. Some woman there didn't have money for the parking meter, so he gave her some spare change for that. He baked cupcakes for friends and neighbors, and he would send them out. It says here he went to the park, and he would pick up litter where people would throw down chewing gum wrappers and whatever, and he'd pick them up and put them in the trash can. Sometimes it was just little bitty things, but he made sure he did one good deed every day. He did that for 365 days. It said that this habit of doing good every day took root in his life, and it changed his life because, you know, you can develop a habit. They say that you just do a habit in just a short time, maybe a month or so, and the habit's yours. So if you develop a good habit, it stays with you. And that's what he did. and it stayed with him. It changed his life. But what I'd like to point out is, it doesn't say if he was religious or not. It just said he did this. Chances are he wasn't in the church. But his motive for doing this, for doing a good deed every day, was out of love. That's the reason he did it. Out of love for this lady that was like a mother to him. That's what drove him to do this 365 days there, do all these deeds, good deeds. He did it out of love. If somebody had just advised him, said, "You'll be a better fellow if you'll do a good deed every day for 365 days, I seriously doubt if he could have done it. Very seriously doubt if he could have done it. If they just said, "This would be a good thing for you to do," he probably wouldn't have. But he was able to do it because of love. Huge difference. Huge difference. Our love for God is deeper than any other love that we know. And it very well should be, because Jesus says in Matthew 10 and 37, "He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." So we're supposed to love God more than ourselves or anybody. So, since this boy was able to accomplish all that he did, and he may not even been a Christian, as I said, just from simply loving a friend, how much more can we accomplish loving God the way we do and the way we should? How much more could we accomplish than that's what this boy accomplished? For somebody that wasn't actually his mother, just a friend. Something to think about. It's food for thought. I'm not endorsing the Methodist Church, but everybody's heard of John Wesley. He's sort of famous for some of the things he did. He had a lot of followers, and some of the things he said make sense, so I'd like to share some of those with you. He was the founder of the Methodist Church in the 18th and 19th century. He had thousands of followers. He summarized three general rules, simple rules that we should follow. And it makes sense. He said every Christian needs to live by these rules. They're simple. They're stated in just a few words. And it makes a lot of sense. But they encompass every aspect of life. Anything you can think of is covered under these three rules. The first one is do no harm. Do no harm. That's not that hard, is it? You think about it. That's a third of what we got to do. Just do no harm. He said, and I quote, this is a quote, "By avoiding evil of every kind, especially that which is most generally practiced." What he's saying is, don't do any harm, don't do any evil, but he said, especially if the whole world is doing something, that does not give you the privilege or the right to do it. Most especially, if it's wrong, if it's harmful, do not do it. Doesn't matter if you're the only one standing. That's what he's saying. Just because the world generally accepts this, sometimes we fall for that. Sometimes we think, well, there's strength in numbers, you know, all these people are doing it, can't be wrong. If it does harm, think about it. If it does harm, we should not do it. Stand alone. Jesus stood alone, didn't he? No matter what the crowd does. Second thing he says is do good. I wonder where he got that idea from. He may have read this part where Peter was talking to Cornelius. Paraphrasing a little bit, the rule says that we should be as merciful as we have power to be. That's what he's saying in the condensed version. And that every opportunity to do good for every possible sort to all. Do good, do good, do good. And finally, the third one, he says, stay in love with God. There's that fellowship with God. There's that walk with God, with Jesus. He says, stay in love with God, because we're not going to be able to do the other two if you don't love God. That's bottom line right there. That's what we need to get from this. We do this by attending all the ordinances of God. In other words, we come to all the services, Bible study, prayer, worship, fellowship, daily service. We do whatever we can to serve God. Stay in love with God. We stay in touch with him, the more we're going to love God. You know, you can miss Sunday morning, and then you might miss another Sunday morning. You go to a ball game, whatever, you go fishing. After a while, it gets pretty easy just to miss church. You stay in love with God, the more you come, the more you're going to love God, the more you're going to do better. It causes you to do better. When we're around each other in fellowship, we all do better. You know, if you're off with the wrong crowd, you're liable to get into mischief. We're good for each other. That's why I believe that's very well why we have the church. It's good for us. If we didn't have the church, I don't think we'd be nearly as dedicated as we are. I don't think I would. We're all too easily led astray. And we go along with the crowd pretty much. And if you go along with this crowd, you'd be doing good. Think about it. You know, when you look at these three general rules, he says you will become an effective disciple of Jesus Christ if you follow these three rules. And it's not all that complicated if you think about it, if you're just dedicated. So what should we be doing? We should be busy. Are you busy? Are you taking the world by storm? Could you be busier? I think we all probably could. You know, we have some strong competition out there. We're in a minority. You know, there's very few of us, and there's so many people that are not in the church. So we need to get busy trying to overcome the evil. You know, Romans 12:21 says, "Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." So that's how we do it. We overcome evil with good. So when we're practicing good, we're trying to not only just be good for ourselves, we're hoping maybe to cancel out some of the evil that's out there. So it's a twofold thing. You know, there's some smart people out there. You ever had your credit card, your check card hacked? I've had mine done that way a couple of times, but the way they've got it set up, you don't really lose anything. I didn't lose anything, but less than a month ago, Julie had her check card hacked or compromised, I think was the word they used. But somebody compromised it and got several dollars out of there. But she didn't lose anything either. Her and Carol Taylor and some of them could explain to y'all how that works. I don't know. But she didn't lose any money. But the point is, her credit card was, or check card was hacked. You know, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't have the first clue about having to hack, how to go about hacking a credit card, hacking a computer. I'd be totally lost on that. So there's some smart crooks out there, very smart. One of the biggest problems in the world is that bad people stay awake at nights thinking up bad things to do. And we so-called good people go to sleep. Now you think about that, sort of unfair, isn't it? They're staying up at nights figuring out bad things to do, and we go on to sleep. They're working overtime, and we're sleeping. We're not doing what the bad people are doing, but we're not doing anything, are we? We're not combating evil with good. We're not doing anything. We're asleep. If we're asleep, hoping that problems are going to go away by morning, you know, we're dreaming. We're not being realistic, are we? I'll use me for example. If I show up at your door and I say, "I'm cold and I'm hungry. I need to put on a coat and I need a sandwich." And you do as it's talked about in the book of James, and you say, "Be thou warmed and filled." That doesn't help me at all. Doesn't help me at all. But you know, that's what it says there. You don't give me a coat. You don't give me a sandwich. You just close the door and I'm still cold and hungry. Now, granted, you didn't take my shirt. I didn't have a coat, but I had a shirt. You didn't take my shirt. I got one last dollar. You didn't take that. I can probably take that and buy some crackers. So I can stay fairly warm with my shirt and I can buy some crackers. You didn't do what the bad people might have done. But you didn't do any good either. You did nothing. Think about that. You didn't do what Jesus would have had you to do either. You know, and if this scenario were true, if I really showed up at your door and this really happened, and you turned me down, you'll answer for it on the last day. In Matthew 25, we're all familiar with that, but I'm going to look at it. Jesus will say to you, "I was hungry and you gave me no meat. I was naked and you clothed me not." And you'll say, "Lord, when did we see you like that? Like, if we'd have seen you, we'd have given you a coat, you know. We just saw Donald and a few others, you know. We didn't help them, but we would have helped you." We like to pick and choose, don't we? That's what you read into that, really. "Lord, if we'd have seen you," they don't say that exactly, but that's sort of what's inferred there. When did we see you like that? And he'll say, well, when you didn't give it to Donald, when you didn't give it to the least of my brethren, and he's one of the least, it's just like you didn't do it to me. If you didn't give it to him, you didn't give it to me. He's there at the last in verse 46, Matthew 25, and these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. We can't pick and choose who we help. We cannot do that. You know, if you do that, if you're doing good just with the ones that you like, just pick and choose, and we don't help everybody, you're no better off. That's a little worse, I think. So go about doing good to everybody. You know, Jesus did that. Jesus got in trouble with it. They'd fuss on him because he would eat with the sinners and the publicans, and he was always fraternizing with Samaritan woman, whoever. You know, he was there with everybody. And they didn't like that. The Jews didn't like that. They just wanted him to be with them and nobody else, leave everybody else alone. They had their own little rules, and they wanted him to abide by their rules. They got it backwards. We don't write the rules, do we? So we don't discriminate. We don't do that because Jesus didn't. And if we do that, if we pass somebody up because they're naked and hungry and they're cold and whatever, thirsty, we pass them up, we'll answer for that. Since it's our duty, Christian duty, to try to be like Christ, then we need to go all the way. We need to be like him in every aspect. We don't pick and choose and just have it our way. If I could write the rules, I could go right on to heaven. But I can't. I just need to do as much as I can like Jesus Christ. So let's develop a habit of doing good like the fellow we read about over there a while ago. Let's do like Jesus did, just go about doing good. You know, I miss Harry Cobb big time. I know all of you do. He did a lot of just what that fellow did. A lot of times he would look for things to do good. He did that a lot. And y'all know that. I'm not telling you anything different, anything new. Sometimes I would have something going on, he'd ask me what I was doing, and I just wouldn't tell him because I knew he'd come over there and do it. So I'd just keep him in the dark so he wouldn't do it, because he went around doing good a lot. He was a good influence on all of us. You know, if we'll do as Jesus did, if we'll go about doing good, we'll have a happier life here in this life besides going to heaven when it's all over. So it's a win-win situation for us. These are my thoughts. Think about them. If you want to obey the gospel tonight and start trying to be like Jesus, of course the opportunity is yours. And if you're falling short and you haven't been doing like you should have been doing, you hadn't been doing as much good like we all probably haven't, if you like prayer for strength or for reinstatement or whatever, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.